come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got to the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
One of the end zone punt. Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live here on a Monday. So glad you could join us. Alongside Roman Oben, I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we will be breaking down the loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars on Sunday in Week 13, 25-24. We'll also be getting to your phone calls, 201-939-4513 on Twitter. You can use hashtag Giants Chat. We'll look to answer your questions on Twitter as well. And Roman, let's first start with the ins and outs of this game. And this was a contest in which the Giants looked great in the first half. They jumped out to that 21-0 lead. They scored on three consecutive offensive possessions in the second quarter. The offense was clicking. They were running the ball. They were throwing the ball. Eli Manning looked comfortable. It was, though, a tale of two halves. What happened in that second stanza?
Well, I think, obviously, when Coach Coughlin said at halftime, we're up 21-3. We can't let them beat us. We can only beat ourselves. Don't throw the game away. Finish. I mean, those are the things. And I said this last night on postgame. At a certain point, at a head coach, all you can do is put them in a position to succeed. From Wednesday morning when you wake up to Sunday pregame, halftime, postgame. And it's really up to the guys in the huddle to go out there and execute. And look, the Larry Donnell, he's a high guy. He gets tackled low. He flips up in the air. I mean, it was a check down. Unfortunate. The sack, which should have been a safety.
Ball's bouncing around.
Yeah. I mean, to get spotted 14, to spot a team 14 points offensively when defense wasn't even on the field, I mean, that's going to happen once every, 5 years. And so, I mean, those are the things. And if you can live with Josh Brown missing his first field goal of the season, but when those three things all happen in the same game, in the same half, or all compounded, if you will, it just made it really unfortunate as to what this team had gone through the last 3 weeks, learning from those losses. I mean, when you lose a lot, and I've been on some teams that were pretty bad. I played 2 years in Cleveland, so that's needless to be said. We don't need to get into that, but it was unfortunate. It was unfortunate. Just poor execution. Offensive line had to shuffle around again.
A lot of injuries.
It's like we're back in last year where you're playing with your eighth and ninth guy that made the team, trying to throw guys in there. When the backup gets injured, then his backup, then you got to move a guy out to tackle. And you've got to throw the ball to now not only preserve a lead, but to try to come back and win in the fourth quarter. Good things aren't going to happen to you.
You mentioned the offensive line. You had Jeff Schwartz start his second straight game at right tackle. Richburg was back at left guard because Adam Snyder was hurt. Then what happened? Schwartz gets hurt in that first quarter, so they have to bring in Dallas Reynolds, and Reynolds goes to right guard. John Jerry moves over to right tackle because Brewer winds up getting a concussion, so they lost two offensive linemen. And this is something that maybe the fans don't realize, and Roman, you can speak from experience. How many reps are the backups getting during the course of practice? I mean, Dallas Reynolds is not lining up next to John Jerry much during the course of practice, or are we wrong to assume that?
Well, for every 10 reps you take during team period with the first group, the second group is probably going to get about 3. So they've got to take more mental reps. They've got to also run scout team. So they're playing football, and usually during scout team, okay, we'll do, Jerry at right tackle just for a couple plays in scout team just to keep you fresh in case. So those kind of mechanisms are in place, but when it's live and in a game situation, you've got to go out there, and it's not the same as the product that you intended to have. Obviously not at the beginning of the season, but at the beginning of the game at the very least.
And when it comes to the offensive line, continuity is certainly an important element. You were talking about a lot of the turning points in this game, and clearly when you give two defensive touchdowns to a team that only averages 15 points a game, that was a huge swing. However, the Giants were still in a position to win this game. And right, similar to the Dallas game, Roman, Jacksonville has the ball after the Giants took the field goal to reclaim the lead. And this was an opportunity to seal this game. Jordan Todman runs to the left side, right, and the Jaguars are called for a hold. So you back them up out of field goal range, and then Blake Bortles on the very next play runs a bootleg, and it brought back memories of that Seahawks game.
Yeah.
What exactly is the breakdown again on defense here?
Well, again, as happy as I was that the defense had 7 sacks. You know, it was like a coming out party for Devin Kennard. He had 2 sacks. JPP had a sack and a half. One of them, he just beat the tackle clean. But from an offensive standpoint, if I'm an offensive coach, I'm saying, all right, these guys are sack hungry. These guys are smelling the blood here. Let's try a bootleg. Let's do a fake dive with a pitch. Let's see if they're still disciplined. Let's see if they fixed those issues from Seattle when they gave up 350 yards on the ground. Well, obviously they didn't, at least for that particular moment, which was the worst moment of the game to lose contain. And if that happens on the 20-yard line coming out, all right, Blake Bortles gets a ambiguous 15-yard run that doesn't count for anything. But the holding call brought you back, as you said, and now they're getting in field goal range. They were really playing on their heels that part of the football game. I mean, again, and you mentioned the Seahawks game. You just hated to see the things. And as an NFL player for 12 years, it's a known fact that whatever you don't fix on Sunday, it's going to show up 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks later. And they're going to say, well, you know, they got beat on this play a couple of weeks ago. Let's see if it still works.
If they've made the adjustments.
Yeah, I mean, you're not reinventing football. You're playing numbers, percentages, and tendencies. And again, when JPP had the sacks, now he hasn't had a lot of sacks this year. He's in the backfield. I'm not picking on JPP as an individual, but defensive ends as a whole, it's like sharks. They smell the blood. And then you throw the wool over their eyes and you boot something around the backside or roll out something. And then Blake Bortles, not known for his running ability. I mean, for him to break those two runs, not one, two runs.
Two in the span of 3 plays.
Yeah.
The holding penalty was what broke it up, and the Jaguars went right back to that.
Yeah.
And you talked about, Roman, that the Giants had made the adjustments because the following week against San Francisco, they kept Colin Kaepernick contained. I mean, he didn't run wild. So, you know, when it comes to the defensive philosophy, whose responsibility when the quarterback rolls out on the bootleg? Is it more on the ends? Is it the linebackers? Where do you need that help to make sure that you contain that quarterback?
It starts with the end because he's the last guy on the line of scrimmage. So any toss or weak side toss that goes outside, he's got to spill that thing and force it to the sideline so that the outside linebacker or even the cornerback can really come up and make that tackle. So when they talk about, you know, team defense, team tackling, that's a particular case where everyone follows one play, and if JPP doesn't make the play, now you got 15 yards running downfield. I haven't seen the film yet, the game film. So I would like to say, where was the cornerback? Was he getting blocked? Where's the outside linebacker that at least prevents that from being, you know, a 15, maybe it's a 5-yard gain. Okay, at least they stopped him and he got a couple yards. So it's a team approach. Everyone has their gaps, their lanes, their responsibility, but it seems like, we hate to go back to the Seattle game, but it seems like when one guy loses contain, then it's a 50-yard or 30-yard. I mean, it's a huge gain, and that's what you don't want. I mean, there's always going to be breakdowns at 3 different levels. The line level, the linebacker level, and that third level being the secondary level, which, again, I'm sure there was a DB that finally made the tackle in that play.
Want to talk about a few more things before we get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. Roman, a common theme over these last few games, the Giants have been in position to win games, and they have lost the last 3 games that they've actually led at halftime. So, I mean, they're competitive, they're in these contests, but as Tom Coughlin talked about leading up to this game, it's about finishing. The fact that you need to close out games. And that was a big mantra when the Giants were winning Super Bowls. You know, even when things go wrong, having the ability to overcome those obstacles and close things out in the fourth quarter. And the one trend that we're seeing in these last few games, you know, they're in it in the fourth quarter. But like you said, it's giving up a defensive touchdown, fumbling, not getting a defensive stop. I mean, where does that lie? Is that a mental? Is that a physical thing? I mean, what's your take on all of this?
Well, there's always been talk about, you know, the halftime adjustment. Oh, what adjustments were made at halftime? Well, I think during the course of a game, there's adjustments that are being made every series. Every time you go to the bench, they look at the film. They look, now it's on iPads. They look at the frame of film. They look at the breakdown, and they make an adjustment that particular moment. At halftime, halftime's too late to make all these adjustments and sometimes momentum starts to change, right? A team finally just settles down. They need to, okay, look at the bigger picture. Now let's go back to what's working. I think one thing that wasn't said enough last week is obviously Jacksonville Jaguars are the youngest team in the league.
Yeah.
But they're also the least penalized team. So Gus Bradley had put these guys in a position, you know, for a young team to be that disciplined was really astounding to me. So these guys are playing disciplined football, and that's what led to that bend but don't break
mentality for them in the second half offensively, and it was the Giants' defense that actually broke in the second half. So you and you could talk about all these things, mental focus, whether it's just plain out executing, you know, mentally sharp, MAs. I mean, when the film gets watched and graded, I'm sure the coaches already watched the film this morning, probably 7, 8 o'clock in the morning. Then you start to say, okay, what plays broke down that led to this? I mean, there were probably 10 different catalysts in terms of plays that led to the what happened in the second half that I'm sure that Jacksonville saw in the first half that they knew they could come back to. But missing a field goal and spotting a team 14 point, I mean, that's a 17-point swing. I mean, you go back to the interception that was tipped Odell Beckham. I think that was the Seahawks game, which I don't know.
With Richard Sherman you're talking
about.
Yeah,
Richard Sherman, yeah.
Yeah, that was the Seahawks game.
Yeah, okay, you're talking about a 3-point swing maybe. You know, that could have been a field goal. But now you're talking about a 17-point swing in the National Football League, and I don't care who you're playing. That's difficult to come back from.
Of course. You could also bring up the Cowboys game, Eli Manning and company in the red zone off Parker's fingertips.
Right.
And then it comes back, a big return via Barry Church. So, you know, it's those little things that are adding up, Roman, and that's what's determining these wins versus these losses.
Yeah, and I'll be 100% honest with you, and I have my Monday morning rant with Paul Dottino. Usually,
good luck with that, by the way.
Usually, and he usually calls me, not the other way around.
Oh, my God. That makes it even worse.
He starts yelling as soon as I said hello. But I've been on teams that were bad teams. I've been on a 3-13 Cleveland Brown team in 2000. Actually, Sean O'Hara was a rookie. We played together on that team. I've been on my rookie year. I think the Giants, we were 6-10 or 5-11. You know, you knew Dan Reeves was going to get fired, and it just didn't have a control of the team. One constant theme of those teams I was on was there wasn't a good quarterback. You know, didn't have a good running back. You know, or maybe Rodney Hampton was getting older at that point, and, you know, Tiki hadn't gotten drafted yet, and that was the next year that Tiki and those guys came. Or in Cleveland, we just didn't have enough. They were still a year removed from that when a team comes back, a new franchise. Not a startup team. What's the word?
Well, you mean expansion team.
Startup team. Sorry. So those were those issues. You know, when I look at this football team, you have a quarterback. That's one of the better half, sorry, the top half of the league. You have a running back in Rashad Jennings that you're happy that he's getting better. I mean, he had 91 yards rushing yesterday. You know, defensively, you have an on-chore role. I mean, you have JPP. I mean, you have pieces of the formula that should work, and that record should be better than where they are now. But the reality is, and every coach has recycled this quote, you are what your record is. You are what your record is, and you are what your record is for a reason. And you could talk about injuries, and, you know, this time last year, I think there were 91 total games missed by injury. If you add all the players, you can talk about starting the season with Snee and Dave Wilson's retirement. That's 32 games right there. You could talk about Schwartz being out and Jennings missing those four games, which I think at least one or two games makes a difference if Jennings at 100% after he gets – you could talk about a lot of those things, Prince, Beason, but – at the end of the day, you've got to have 11 guys that break the huddle and have to execute no matter what the coach says. You know, when the reporters say, hey, what did coach say at halftime? What really – no, it's – we're all intrinsically motivated as professional athletes, and we have to put away all the negative stuff, the distractions. You know, good adversity versus bad adversity, Lance. If good adversity is means you got to lead, you know, you want to preserve that lead. Bad adversity – adversity is they thought we couldn't do it. We got to prove them wrong. I mean, there's those themes every single week. And as a pro athlete, you've got to, as a pro football player especially, there's too many intricacies in football that have to go right for you to win. You know, this isn't the NBA where you sign LeBron and you've got a 75% chance of going to the finals.
With one superstar.
With one guy. Yeah. No, in football, a lot of things, I mean, there's...
It's a team sport.
Special teams. You talk about that tip ball at Preston Parker. If he doesn't try to catch it, it's an incomplete pass and they score So all those things have to happen, but again, it ultimately comes down to poor execution from the 11 guys that break the huddle, no matter who's in the huddle, period.
Roman also was talking about the injury bug that has plagued the Giants this season. Before we get to your phone calls, just want to go over the injuries that came out of this game. Jeff Schwartz, as we mentioned, left in the first half, an ankle injury. During Tom Coughlin's press conference, he mentioned that it's tendon damage. They're going to determine the severity of the injury through further testing this week. So we will keep you posted on Giants.com in terms of Jeff Schwartz. James Brewer left with a concussion. He'll have to go through the normal concussion protocol following NFL procedures. On the defensive side, Robert Ayers left with a pectoral injury. There is a report, which I'm sure a number of you have seen, that it's a torn pectoral muscle like Walter Thurman, then he's out for the season. The Giants have not officially announced anything, so that is pure speculation at this point. I'm sure Tom Coughlin and company will update everybody a bit later on. And Rashad Jennings suffered an ankle injury. Andre Williams came in for him in the second half. Once again, the team will update his status moving forward a little bit later on. So that's the latest in terms of the injuries. Before we get to the lines, we want to remind listeners that they are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site, where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend, where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now. Enter code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter BLUE for free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. So glad you could join us here on a Monday. Big Blue Kickoff Live. He's Roman Oben. I'm Lance Meadow. Let's open up the phone lines here on a Monday. 201-939-4513. And to get us started, we head to Florida with Gary. Gary, what's happening?
How you doing, gentlemen?
Doing well, Gary. What's on your mind?
Could be better.
Good. I just want to give you a little perspective about the game. I was down there yesterday up in Jacksonville, and, man, you would have thought you was down at the Meadowlands with all the blue down there. I mean, we was having a great time. I mean, we were living it up to that first half, and, boy, did we have to eat crow walking out of that stadium, boy. I mean, it was a good game, but, man, did we bite out. We just shoot ourselves in the foot so much. And the biggest play to me in the game, I want to say it was that Rashard Jennings trying to pick that ball up in the end zone, man. He should have definitely laid down on that. I expected a little bit more veteran leadership with him and knowing the situation and getting down there. What do you guys think about that play? Do you think that was one of the turning points for the game?
Yeah, I mean, you know, last night on the postgame show, you know, we had a riveted discussion about that. I think Sean O'Hara, you know, kind of led the charge in accusing two offensive linemen of not hustling to get to the ball to dive on it for a safety. I think Beatty was one. I didn't see who the other offensive line was. But when those kind of things happen, you can only react. And we can always macroanalyze and play it in slow motion. What could have happened? I know the play was – the ball was between a defender's legs. And we all thought that Rashard Jennings had the ball in his possession with one knee down until a player came and dove on top of it. And then he had a possession, and then I saw NFL football operations actually tweets all the challenges that they go back. So instantly, you're not getting an apology Monday morning. They're saying, listen, they went back, they saw it that night. They've done a lot to just have videos. I've been in this room. It's like 50 flat screens. They're all like 50 inches. So they have someone assigned to watch every single replay so that right away they show that like the rule was conclusive that it was true. So there was no controversy in that call. Rashard Jennings did not have the ball in his possession, and the offensive the player for Jacksonville that dove on the ball that recovered it for a touchdown was accurate. So, look, I've been at left tackle, and you're blocking a guy, and you see a ball, then you're running, you either overrun it, you fall on the ground, somebody runs into you, and then it's always, oh, what could have happened? I should have dove. But you're reacting. You know, it's Rashard Jennings. I don't think Rashard Jennings, my personal opinion, gave a poor effort trying to recover the ball. I mean, I don't want that to go out there in the energy.
Right.
But, again, it's just unfortunate that that was one of the bigger mistakes that led to the Giants, you know, losing, dropping their ninth win, seventh in a row.
All right, Gary.
You know, I thought going into there that any place would be – what place would be better than Jacksonville to get off a six-game losing streak? But, boy, was I wrong about that. But you gentlemen have a great day. And I enjoy the show. Thank you.
All right, Gary. Thanks so much.
Enjoy your holidays, brother.
Appreciate that. And as you mentioned, Roman, you know, sometimes the ball just doesn't bounce your way, and we're seeing a number of those things. Another play that I'll refer to in yesterday's game, Devon Kennard has an interception in the end zone.
Oh, yeah.
And that drop all of a sudden leads to a Jaguars field goal. I mean, you take 3 points off the board, Roman, as you were talking about earlier. Hey, that's the difference between winning or losing a game by a point. So, you know, it's all of these game-changing potential plays that, you know, determine what happens with respect to a contest.
Yeah, and I said this last week, and, you know, people talk about a great team, you know, out-executes the opponent, or they capitalize from another opponent's mistakes, or makes the least amount of mistakes. a lot of people don't say teams that recover from mistakes do well. Because you talk about Devin Kennard, the interception. Let's go back to Antoine Rose dropped interception last week.
The Cowboy game.
Or the Cowboy game. Let's talk about the tip ball by Preston Parker. I mean, if you're not able to recover from those things, because those things in a game do happen, then the next day or after the game, you're saying, oh, man, if that didn't happen, we'd have won. If that didn't happen, this team would have won. So it's you've got to be able to recover from any mistakes or any adversity that happens throughout the course of a game. And that's why it's not just about what was said pregame or what was said at halftime adjustments. You've got to instantly adjust to anything that goes on, good or bad, and capitalize on. And the great teams are the ones that do capitalize from other teams' mistakes and recover from their own as well.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Joey is in Virginia. Joey, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Robin. How you guys doing today?
Hey, Joey.
Doing well, Joey. What you got?
Man, I'll tell you what, man. Watching the same game over I watched last week. You know, I mean, the offense did what it did, and we all know that. And I'll get to that in a second, but defense, for the most part, pretty great, but again, to when it counts, it comes down to that last drive, and they cannot play fundamentally sound football. One play beat us all day, that outside sweep, and it did it to us in the Seattle game, and Romo got outside. I just don't understand how a single play can destroy an entire defense. It destroyed the game for us again. I just don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah, Joey, I agree 100%, and we talked about that, where it comes back to, you know, discipline, gap, lane integrity. You know, Carl Banks always talks about gap integrity. If you play, and he learned that from Bill Belichick, you know, if you control your gap, that outside, that D gap, you know, A, B, C, D, D is the outside gap, no matter what else goes on in the game, the plays will come to you. And sometimes when you see, you know, especially defensive players that are hungry to get tackles, everyone wants to do, I mean, that's the nature of a defense. You want to make that impact play. You want to make the play that helps break this game open or turnover, what have you. But again, it starts with the integrity, doing your job first, not doing more than that. And not, I mean, how many times did we see two defensive players just this season, or in football, yeah, in general, run into each other, you know, poor angles, and then the guy's still running downfield, ends up in the end zone or what have you. Go back to the beginning of the season, Joey. The blown covers in the Detroit game. I mean, some of those things were maybe signs of things to come later on. But again, I know these guys are preparing hard every week, and they're self-correcting. There's a lot of pride on that side of the ball. Antro Rolls has done a tremendous job. I mean, you need 11 of those guys out there like Antro. I mean, he's a captain for a reason. But again, there have been some breakdowns in that big piece of real estate on the football field between the numbers and the sidelines. That's been a vulnerable part for this defense, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you know, Roman, you're right. I mean, and Antro Rolls is a guy that needs to come back to this team next year. He is the heart and soul of that defense, and he is an emotional. And you can even see after the game in the interviews, you know, you can see the guys. I mean, these guys are upset. These guys have heart. I'm not saying they don't. But if I hear JPP say one time, we're going to get this right, well, when are you going to get it right? When are you going to get it right? It happens every week. Every week it's the same thing with JPP. He says, and I love JPP, but he says the same thing, we're going to get this right. Well, when? When should we start believing you're going to get it right until you change it? You know, poor Tom Coughlin he's in his press conference. The guy is distraught, and people want Tom Coughlin's head. He is one of the best coaches in the National Football League. You want to get rid of Tom Coughlin? Tell me who is better. Tell me who watches video more. Tell me who knows more about the X and O's than Tom Coughlin. Nobody. Nobody at all. That guy is a great coach. And, you know, people get on Perry Fuel. Yes, I think Perry Fuel might have to go. But these guys cannot go out there and play the game for the players. The players have to play and the coaches have to coach. And that's what drives me crazy about it.
All right, Joey, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in.
Yeah, I appreciate
it. Thank you, guys.
I appreciate Joey's comments about Coach Coughlin. I remember Sean O'Hara talked about when he played. I never played for Tom Coughlin, obviously. I played against him, you know, some of those Jacksonville teams. You had to bring your lunch when you played against the Tom Coughlin football team. You know, Tony Brackens, Kevin Hardy. I mean, they had what's the safety from Syracuse? Donovan Darius. I mean, he would just light guys up, you know, offensively. Tony Baselli, Bruno. I mean, they had a lot of – I mean, Keenan McCardo was one of my best friends, actually.
Jimmy Smith, too.
Jimmy Smith.
Fred Taylor. I mean, they had a number of tough guys.
Yeah, I mean, they had a lot of guys, a lot of good talent. But Sean O'Hara, we talked about this quote, I think Coach Coughlin used. I think it's an Abe Lincoln quote. If you've got 6 hours to chop a tree down, you better spend 4 hours sharpening the axe. And in terms of that preparation and preparing yourself and enabling yourself to get a chance to win, you know, it's book prepare to win, earn the right to win. And, I mean, Tom Coughlin is a prepare. I mean, he is a prepare guy. And, you know, if there's one thing that you know during the week, he's going to prepare the guys for a chance to win. And I understand and I respect Joey from Virginia's sentiment about, you know, where certain guys are in terms of execution and not putting it all on the head coach.
Well, execution's the key word, as you've been saying, Roman. You know, it's not as if this team doesn't go into a game and doesn't know what to expect. It's just a matter of, hey, you're in the position, you know, are you going to make the play? And that's why we're sitting here and we're talking about a lot of these, you know, game-changing plays, a fumble here, an opportunity to make an interception. You know, those are little things. They don't necessarily always show up in the box score. You know, if you didn't watch that game and you just look at the box score, you're not going to be able to pick up on a lot of the plays that really dictated the game yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, Coach Coughlin always talks about playing beyond the X's and O's. Yeah. It's you run a route, you do that, but sometimes you got to go take a ball away from the other guy on the team. You've got to block a guy a little bit longer. If these deep routes have to open up, you've got to block your guy longer than expected. You've got to run and try to break those runs and carry defenders with you. So there's a lot of things beyond just doing your job at certain times that you have to do to seal a victory and take a victory from another team.
201-939-4513. Let's head back to the lines. Edward is in D.C. Edward, good morning. What's happening?
Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call, Lance and Roman. I just wanted to talk about the Giants' season. You know, we're 3-9. I think this is the worst season we've had in the longest time. And I love Tom Coughlin. You know what he's done, what he stands for. I just want you guys to kind of break it down for me. What does this Giants football mentality mean? Because to me, I think it means, you know, Coughlin's instance is to run the ball 50 times, 50% of the time, and then pass the ball half the time and just have that balance. And I think that's his only fault as far as his coaching philosophy. He doesn't want to stray away from the run. And that's kind of hurts the team because during these games that we've lost, it seems like we should have beat the Seahawks, the Niners, the Cowboys, and now Jacksonville. And it seems like when we pass the ball, the passing game works, but he doesn't want to keep passing the ball, and he wants to, you know, run the ball just to have that balance. So I just want you guys' take on it. What do you think is that Giants football mentality? And if you guys want to talk about keeping Coughlin, who's to say nothing's going to change next year? Is it going to be the same, 3-6 season next season, or are we going to bounce back? What has to change for the Giants to turn it around?
All right, Edward. Well, thanks for the phone call. We'll address both of your points. Roman, before we get to the whole changing of the aspect of the team, I want to focus on the last point that Edward brought up about the run.
Right.
When you're up 21-0, when you're up 21-3, you know, he was talking about going through the air, but that's the time you want to run the football. And the Giants were attempting to run the football yesterday. I mean, they ran the ball 35 times yesterday. So it wasn't as if they were in a position where you needed to air it out. You want to pound the ball, milk the clock, and win that game when you're up by 18 at the break.
And it's not like you're going into 4-minute offense. You know, 4-minute offense meaning the offense that you run when you're preserving a lead, you want to stay in bounds. You're not doing that in the middle of early third quarter, but you've afforded yourself, because of the lead, you've afforded yourself the opportunity to say, let's control this clock, let's keep it on the ground, let's throw the ball when we want to throw it, let's dictate to the defense what we do, and let's dictate the Jacksonville Jaguars what we do because of that lead. But you still have to stay, Lance, you still have to stay in attack mode. So you can run the ball, but it's got to be rhythm runs. You've got 3 yards, 4 yards, 5 yards, a 15-yard gain. Come back, dump it to the tight end. I mean, most offenses, and, you know, whether it's West Coast or whatever, those are all labels. But what you really want is an identity. And that identity, when it scores 21-3, is, all right, let's put the nail in the coffin. Let's run these guys out of the gym, if you will, by dictating what happens, dictating what's going to be done on third down. Not you're down, it's third and long, now you have to come up with a play where you have to cover 15 yards. But again, the Giants did not, because of what they did offensively, they also put defense in a position where they had to, you know, kind of play on their heels a little bit at the end. I mean, because 7 sacks, I mean, we haven't seen that in a while.
First time since 2010 against the Bears when they had 10 on Jay Cutler.
Yeah, exactly. And then a lot of other things the defense did well. Again, trying to exploit a rookie quarterback who really had been struggling all season since he started.
15 interceptions coming, most in the NFL.
Yeah, Exactly.
And speaking of that, Roman, the Giants didn't get a takeaway, and they've lost their last 14 games when they haven't forced a turnover by the opposition because, you know, when you're an opportunistic team, which the Giants have been for the most part this team. I mean, they're up there in takeaways if you look at the rankings, but you figure, hey, this is a juicy matchup. You're going up against a quarterback that doesn't have a great deal of experience, and they were in position. That's why we keep going back to the Devon Kennard interception and right. some of these other opportunities to grab a fumble when the ball is on the ground. You know, they were there for the taking. It was just a matter of not being able to secure the football.
And I mentioned this before, you know, being on you know, the teams that I've been on that weren't great teams. When you're offense and you're on the sidelines, you're hoping for defense to get an interception to give you a short field so you can at least come up with a field goal. Or when you're on defense, you're on the bench, you're hoping for offense to put together an 8-minute drive, 15 plays so you can get rest so you're not as vulnerable. I mean, and that's inside the mind of a pro athlete that wants to go out there and win. So sometimes when you're struggling and desperate for wins, you're almost hoping the other side of the ball does a little bit more than they should so that your job can be easier. And that's me being 100% honest. I mean, I've been in games where we had a lead, and you say, listen, I hope defense is out there for 10 plays and they kick a field goal because then we can rest too. And I say that just to say, you know, to Edwards' point, the identity for any team should be to run the ball when you want and throw the ball when you want.
Of course.
Period. It doesn't – and you start talking about ball distribution. They ran too much. They didn't throw enough. That's all circumstance. Circumstances will dictate a lot of play calling. You know, third and longs, lower percentage of success. Third and shorts, much higher percentage of success. There's higher percentage passing, hitches, slants. This offense is predicated fundamentally on all the passing plays happening within 25 yards from the line of scrimmage. I mean, I think if you Googled West Coast offense, everything happens within 25 yards of the line of scrimmage. You spread the team out, the defense out, and you run the ball. You attack by running the ball. I mean, look at the, you know, the Green Bay teams, the 49ers teams, you know, these teams that had success. Everyone's taken some bit of the West Coast offense over a year, so there's no pure West Coast offense anymore. But everything starts at running the ball, having big backs. I mean, in Tampa, we had Mike Alstott, Mike Pittman. Both those guys were 240 pounds. Thomas Jones came the next year. And we had big backs,
big
and we wanted to run. It wasn't hitch, slant, slant. I mean, we ran the ball when we, you know, hopefully we wanted to run. But again, it's about the identity and not a label. And you really hope that at some point this season, whatever's left of the season, I think it's four games now, I mean, you're down to the last quarter of the season, this team can end this thing on a high note, maybe a four-game winning streak. I don't know. But again, they've got to come away feeling good about something. And I was really hoping at halftime yesterday, saying, man, this team is going to finally appreciate what it means to just win a game. Because it's been October 5th since the last time this team won a game, you know, October 5th and counting, now that they lost again yesterday to Jacksonville.
And the offensive performance in the first half looked like it was going to lead to that victory. You touched on balance, and I just want to run through some of the numbers from yesterday's game because our last caller was touching on, you know, maybe the need to throw more than run. Manning attempted 34 pass attempts, and then they ran the ball 35 times. So that's balance. And this was the breakdown in terms of the running plays yesterday. In the first quarter and the second quarter, they had just one run for negative yardage, and that was only on that first drive. So they were very efficient. They had 11 runs for 5 yards or more yesterday, 2 for 10 yards or more, 6 runs for no gain or negative yards. But it was the fourth quarter runs, Roman. You know, that's where you wanted to see more productivity. Negative 4, 4, 0, 0.
Yeah.
And if you're able to run the ball, you don't get into those third and longs as you were talking about. You get a little bit more continuity on offense. And most important, you're able to milk the clock because the game was in their hands. It was just the fact that there was enough time for the Jaguars to do some damage.
And I think sometimes second and longs are more dangerous than third longs because now you're saying you have to get 6-7 yards on this down. I mean, you're almost playing the percentage, saying, "All right, now I want to create a third and short situation. So let's find the best possible scenario to get us 6-7 yards, so that it's only third and five or whatever on the next one." And then you drop a ball, you have a bad run. Now you're in third and long. So I'm a big component in second and long being almost the most important down. So that you get out of those bad third down situations.
Listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now. Enter code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter BLUE for free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. So glad you could join us for Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live alongside Roman Oben. I'm Lance Meadow. Let's head back to the phone lines at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Joe is in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's happening?
Oh, what's happening? Wonderful day in the neighborhood, ain't it? I think
I wouldn't go that far.
three games in Giants history that reminds me. The 49ers in the playoffs blowing that one. Did you recall that one?
In the postseason you're talking about?
Yeah. That one, that was a gut check. And then the one against the Eagles, I forget the score, how many they were up on. They finally punted it up the middle, and Jackson ran it back, that one. And now this one. You know, can you think of another bigger blower one than them two or three?
Well, I think those other two games were worse because that 49ers game, I mean, you're talking about a playoff game.
Of
so,
course.
A playoff loss is always bad. I mean, everyone's upset when you lose. Unless you win the Super Bowl, everybody else is a loser at the end of the season. And then I think you're talking about that.
The Eagles game when Michael Vick had that comeback. And remember, the Giants were in position to get first place in the division then. So
yeah,
that was a key game, too.
Yeah, so I think those two, I mean, this being a third, probably a distant third just because of the severity of losing seven in a row, being 3-9, I mean, mathematically, you know, being out of everything now. Unless you're in the NFC South, which the Giants are not. And then at the end of the day, you have a losing season now, back-to-back seasons. First time in a long time for Giants Nation. Joe, did you have another point
you
wanted to make?
Yeah, well, this one here, I think, is one that was worse because they were good teams you were playing against in that. But this one was a shame. This was a total team loss. You just keep naming the fumble, the interception. But the defense let you down. They could have stopped it at the end. The offense there, they could have did it. They could have scored some more. You know, they left down. The specialty teams there, they could have won it with a field goal. I have to look at the coaching. You know, even them, you think they, you know, yell out to the players, watch the quarterback around the end and stuff like this. I mean, if this was we didn't have the respect for Tom Coughlin and the coaches and stuff like that, if I was the owner, they would be fired over it, somebody. But I said next year none of this stuff can go on like this. This would have to be the end, winning Super Bowls or not. We could not go on with it because there was too much this year with the offense being changed. There was lots of injuries on the defense. And that, but they had a great year as far as I'm concerned with the draft. And the only consoles I take from this again is that we're going to get a higher draft pick. And but I said none of this can go for next year. This has been 2-3 years in a row, and like we are rebuilding. But I mean, this has to be it after next year. I mean, if we would have something like this, I mean, there would have to be some kind of big changeover. So that's all I can say. This one here is gonna. Nobody's gonna sleep when I think of the Giants. I'll be rolling over again. Even I go to my relatives for the holidays, have turkey. Are they gonna fire Coughlin? No, they shouldn't. There's no way. Or so in their coaching. But I mean, this one is one that I have to say we as a Giant, the one the most that I am ashamed of losing. So.
All right, Joe.
Thank you.
Appreciate
you.
The call.
Thanks
so
Joe.
Much for weighing in. And listen, it's painful for everybody, Roman. The fans are taking it hard. The team, the coaching staff, I mean, it's a tough loss. There's no way to get around that, and nobody's trying to get around that.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you. As an offensive lineman, you know, I blocked for you know, Dave Brown, Danny Cannell, Kent Graham, and then Kerry Collins came my last year. Before when I left here, then they went to that Super Bowl 34 against the Ravens, and I would have given anything to block for a guy like Eli Manning when I was a young starter. And it's you know, with the offensive line, you know, in terms of personal pride and things like that, and playing with pride, and It's really about executing. I mean, it's you look at next year, you look at the future, in terms of the future, there's only really one change you're going to have to make on the offensive line because BD's set. I look at J.D. Walton probably playing center next year, his natural position. Schwartz at right guard, Pugh at right tackle. I mean, you don't have to reshuffle the offensive line, but I think from that fifth to eighth guy, you better make sure that those guys can come in there and play. I mean, I'm a little more critical on the guys. I'm never going to criticize coaching. Obviously, I'm never going to criticize organization or scouting or any of that stuff because all those guys can do is get you here. Now, all they can do is tell you what time the meeting is, what time you got to be in practice, and now you got to play. You got to play. And look, I've been a little critical on James Brewer about where he is in this part of his career. That he should be competing for a starting spot. I mean, I think you are who you are by your 30 in the NFL. I'm a little more critical on, John Jerry. I think he was always just a good pass protector, a good pass blocker, not as good of a run blocker for his size. And then, you know, Beatty's been – he's had a quiet, good season. Pugh, unfortunately, got injured, and he had that bad Eagles game, but he's been fighting. He's been fighting hard. He's been getting better. He's got pride. He wants to do well. Richburg, J.D.
He's a rookie.
Yeah, so those guys are working, and I know Coach Flaherty was working those guys. They're working their butts. I watch practice. But again, you got to bring in all the Sunday, and you got to execute. And every team's dealing with injuries. Every team's dealing with some type of an issue. But more specifically, this team, I think this loss hurts worse just for the simple fact that it's you wanted to prove that you weren't at the bottom of the league. You wanted to go out there and prove and say, all right, we've had to learn from Dallas game, learn from Seattle, learn from that Monday night game against the Colts, learn from the 49ers game. And we're playing the Jacksonville Jaguars. We put it all together, and we run these guys out of the gym. And it didn't happen. And I think that's where the biggest disappointment is about this loss versus where they were this time last year versus anything else that's happened in the last couple of seasons. Not going to the playoffs again. But I'm always going to be a little more critical on the guys that get it done because I've had to wake up and I've had to practice. And
I've been in those shoes?
I've been in those shoes. So that's where I've never been a coach in the NFL. I've never had to watch film on a college kid or another guy on another team and see if he fits in the scheme. I've never had to do that. So I can't speak to those levels of expertise, but I can speak to what the players have to do to execute. And I think specifically on the offensive line, there's been a poor job of executing at certain places.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Nana's in Georgia. Nana, what's happening?
Hi, how are you?
Hey, Nana.
Doing well, Nana.
We don't get a lot of female callers, so we appreciate female
changing things up.
Football fans.
What's on your mind, Nana?
Well, I want to first start off by saying, you know, I don't like how people are saying Tom Coughlin. I get it. He's a great coach, and who are you going to find who's going to coach the team better than him, and who's going to watch more film, you know, more than he do, and all this other stuff. Okay, I get it, but it's like, come on, enough is enough. You know what I'm saying? Look at Andy Reid in Philly. He was a good for Philly for, what, 10 years? But, I mean, all good things come to an end, and that's what the situation was in Philly, and that's what's going on right now in New York. He needs to go. You know what I'm saying? He's old. He doesn't have that energy. He's not a player's coach. Yeah, people respect him, but he's not a player's coach. And to me, I just feel like his time is up. His time, Perry Few, and Jerry Reese, because it's like 50-50. Is his fault? Is Jerry Reese's fault, and is Tom Coughlin's fault? Because Tom Coughlin didn't make sure that he drafted the players that he needed. You know, okay, they're like injuries and all that other stuff. Well, guess what? You build a team with your with the bench. You know what I'm saying? You can't just build a team based on starters, you know, because your starters are going to go down. It's football. Everybody gets injured at some point or another. You know what I'm saying? So he, you know, Tom Coughlin didn't make sure he got the plays that he needed. And Jerry Reese, you know, I just don't know what he got going on. But all of them, they need to go. It's time for a change. You know, everybody would have sit there and say, oh, the Super Bowl, he got us 2 Super Bowls. Okay, that's good. But how crappy have we been since then? Since that Super Bowl, we've been a terrible team. And if you ask me, those Super Bowls, I mean, it was just luck. Luck was on our side, because if you look at both of those seasons when we won the Super Bowl, we wasn't a good team.
Well, you can't change history. Nana, excuse me. Excuse me.
Teams all over the place. We wasn't that team.
Ma'am, you can't change history, so we can't say, well, those Super Bowl teams have an asterisk. It's still a Super Bowl team.
Okay, nobody didn't say, oh, what I'm saying is, if you look back at the seasons when we won the Super Bowl, it wasn't like we were just this outstanding team. If you go back and look, we lost, what, 6 straight games first, the first one we won?
They didn't lose 6 straight. They got off to a slow start.
The beginning of the season.
But Nana, to piggyback off of your point, I mean, you look at the recent history of the NFL. There's been a lot of wild card teams that have gone on to win Super Bowls. Correct. Even the 6 seed. The Steelers were a 6 seed. So, you know, it's really not how you do over the 16-game slate. You just got to get in, because anything can happen in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I was on a 14-2 team that had the number 1 seed overall. San Diego Chargers 06. We lost in the first round to New England Patriots at home. All we had to do was beat them and beat the Colts. I mean, there've been,
you get on a hot run.
They've been 13-3. I mean, look at Kansas City last year.
But what do you have to say for now? You know, there's 3 seasons in a row where it's just not been good seasons. The last 2 have just been horrible. But what do you have to say? You really sit there with be comfortable with Tom Coughlin staying and possibly go through this again for a 3rd straight horrendous season?
Well,
to me, it's like people in the NFL, you get paid to win. You get paid. Everybody have that same goal to get to the playoffs and to eventually make it to the Super Bowl. But we have not been doing that. You know, think about it. Luck came on our side, and we got in, you know, to cut that being out for 5 years.
Hey, Nana, we're gonna have to let you go. So thanks for your call. Thank you for your look. And I get it. Fans are frustrated and upset. But you know, this is a Giants show, and it's not my decision what happens with the Giants' future. Just like it wasn't my decision this time last year when the team went 7-9. Whatever changes they made, they made some wholesale changes in the rosters and bringing in players in. But again, look, I get it. Fans are upset. Everyone has their opinion, and thank you for calling to voice your opinion on the team. But I'm not qualified to speak on the future of Tom Coughlin or anybody in this building about their future.
Well, right now the focus is on the last 4 games of the season.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to call in and weigh your opinion, you know, we let everybody speak. But, you know, right now we're trying to focus on the remainder of the season and the Jacksonville game and things that the Giants could build off of and certainly improve. And speaking of that, let's head back to the lines. We got Mike in Pennsylvania. Mike, what's on your mind?
Yeah, hey, what's going on, guys? Just want to call about, like, everyone putting the nail in Coughlin's head. You guys are saying it. I mean, this guy, I see it. He's a true blue guy. That guy's out there spilling his guts every single week, putting the X's and O's. I mean, the guy knows what it means to be a New York Giant. And you guys, I'm sure you guys see that the way he reacts on the sidelines. The point I want to hit on it is, what do you think of Ryan Nassib here? Do we have something with him or what? Because last night I was on YouTube. I did Google everything about this kid last night. The kid got awesome feet work. And that's the thing with Eli. Every time there's someone coming in the backfield, he turned like the Jacksonville yesterday twice. That safety that should have happened, the safety that should have been, turned to a touchdown. I think with Nassib back there, getting like the mobility that he has, the gunslinger that he, also the arm that he's got, it just seems like, I really think, I don't like to say it, because I love Eli to death, but I really think it's Eli's time just to step aside. And also, this is what I was thinking about it last night. This is one of my other parts. Do you think we could if we were to trade Eli Manning, could we get a first-round draft pick for him? That's my one question right there, just right out there. The O-line, Roman, you're right, the O-line is dismantled right now, totally dismantled. I don't like it. I see no heart. I see heart from Entrell Roll to Jennings to McClain, that's it. Only those three guys. And what else do I have written down here? I mean, I'm telling you, I'm a diehard. I live here in PA, so I got to deal with Philly, and I go nuts.
You poor guy.
What's that?
I said, you poor guy.
Oh, I'm telling you, I mean, I go nuts. I bleed blue out here. You should see my house, my everything. And with Michael Cox, why don't they, Williams? Well, this guy cannot find a hole. Why? I don't understand, if I can get an input from you guys, but Michael Cox, I think when he came in the year when our two starters went down, Michael Cox, give him the rock. Let him put it in. Let him go somewhere with the ball. Williams, it seems like every time he touches the ball, he runs into a guy instead of running into the hole. And Corey Washington, put the guy in there. Give him more. Eli, when he had Plaxico out there, I remember that was Eli's favorite target because of his height. Eli, no more lie. Every time a guy's open, Preston Parker, 2 weeks ago, Dallas Cowboys game. Preston, Parker's wide open in the middle there, overthrown. Let's put Corey in there. Let's see what Corey's got. 15 guys on the IR, I understand. It's not Coughlin's fault. It's nothing like that. And then this is my last point right here, and this makes me sick. I cannot stand Perry Fuel anymore. The past 2 weeks, we had the lead. And if you watch the game, watch the tape, the last two drives of each of the Cowboys and Jaguars beating us, we're rushing four guys who are given nothing. It just seems like they're out of gas. Where's the safety? Where's the corner? A nickel? Someone else? Bring somebody with speed around the outside or up the gut, a linebacker, somebody to give some relief to these four guys. It's just horrible. To be honest with you, McAdoo's offense, it seems a little soft. It's not Eli's offense. It's not. That's why I question, is this more of a Naz's offense or an Eli? This is not an Eli offense. So if you could just give me some input, what you guys think about the Eli trade and what we could get for him, honestly.
All right, Mike.
To my point, you have to look into it. You
All
have
right, Mike.
Anymore.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. I think it's really getting ahead of ourselves here. I mean, when we're talking about trading Eli Manning, Roman, we still got a guy in his prime. We still have a guy that's playing very good football. This is where we've got to put things in perspective.
Yeah, it absolutely would never happen if the team entertained trading Eli. Now, maybe that quarterback down in Washington, D.C.,
a few
of those guys down there, but I don't think that would ever happen. And look, obviously Michael Cox on IR, he's injured. He had his opportunities to make the team outright when David Wilson was injured because of his neck, and he got put on practice squad. So from a coaching standpoint, these coaches know what they're doing now. I mean, for a guy who's now in his third year in training camp, and has made the active roster, gets put on practice squad, it shows that there was a reason why he got put on practice squad. Did he not know the plays? Did he not, you know, his aptitude or something? And again, I don't know what the other point was.
Well, he mentioned Nassib. Yeah. That was another one, you know, as well as the defense.
And look, I get it. Everyone loves a second string quarterback. I played with a guy. I played with a guy by the name of Charlie Whitehurst when I was in San Diego. And every time Phil Rivers threw an interception, it was like Whitehurst. He goes to Seattle, you know, gets a chance, doesn't pan out. I think now he's in Tennessee. I mean, he's an eternal backup. And I'm not saying this about Ryan Nassib, but let's make sure we're not evaluating a guy based on what he did against guys in preseason, second and third stringers in preseason, guys who didn't make the team. Ryan Nassib was a young, developing player. He's a smart guy. He's from PA. I think went to Malvern, PA, Malvern Prep down there, Syracuse guy. So he's a local guy, but I mean, he is who he is at this point. And I know it's hard. Quarterbacks don't really get a chance to play unless the guy's injured. I mean, look what's happening in Dallas. I mean, sorry, not Dallas. Look what's happening in Philadelphia.
Romo was out for a little bit.
Those are the situations. But, again, I understand the fan sentiment about what they feel about certain positions on the team or head coach or what have you, and they have a right to that. And look, I bleed blue as well. I mean, I played for this organization that drafted me and Wellington Mary and George Young, you know, rest in peace. And I feel emotionally connected to this football team. But in terms of evaluating what the issues are, trading Eli is not one of the options. As the other caller said, I don't think it's all on Coach Coughlin. But again, I don't want to speak out of turn because I'm not qualified to make that decision about what's the ultimate what's going to happen or not going to happen when the season's over. So, but I appreciate all the calls and what fans do have input.
They're
and
passionate.
They do have say so. They're passionate and they want to see teams win. They want to see teams execute. And Look, I want to see JPP at 15 sacks. I want to see Eli throw for 5,000 yards. I want to see an O-line, you know, 150 yards on the ground every week, and Eli stands clean and can make a sandwich back there. But that hasn't happened. But are they working towards hoping that happens sooner than later? Absolutely.
One of the other points that the last caller brought up, and you just alluded to it in terms of getting pressure on the quarterback, and JPP had 1.5 sacks yesterday. They had 7 as a team, and they were getting pressure, Roman. And I'm curious your perspective from other layers other than the front four, because the linebackers yesterday were responsible for 3 of the 7 sacks. Kennard had 2, and McClain had 1. So it wasn't as if they were just saying, hey, the front four are the only group that has to get there.
Well, considering the front four failed last week and giving Tony Romo so much time to throw the ball, I think Parafuel said, look, we've got to create pressure other ways. Devin Kennard is a physical guy. He's a good blitzer. He got 2 sacks. JPP had his 1.5. Kerry Wynn, a rookie, free agent rookie, made the team.
Time.
Yeah, active. You know, he had a sack. So when this team is playing well defensively, the pressure, the turnovers, the impact players are coming from all over the field, not just the front four. So I think Parafuel, in his defense, has made up for, you know, at least trying to find pressure from other parts of the defense, not just on front four. But when you start having pressure from linebackers, Stevie Brown had a sack, then the D-line starts to pick it up too. So, and you've got to try to find that balance. I asked Coach Coughlin last week, like, how do you find that balance of creating pressure from alternative sources without compromising yourself in the secondary in terms of coverage. And it's something that's a very delicate balance that defensive coaches and coaching staff have to do.
Well, I agree with you. I think that they definitely were looking to move guys around. And the other thing to remember, Devon Kennard was a defensive lineman in college at USC.
Right.
So you might as well use his talent to your advantage.
Right.
You can move him around. He's comfortable playing defense.
Yeah, he makes a living on that line of scrimmage and in that backfield. And that's why, as going to linebacker, probably because of his size, a little undersized, he's a good at the line of scrimmage, blitzing, you know, creating pressure on the quarterback type of linebacker. That's the type of player that he is. And we hoped to see more of that in the future.
We want to remind our listeners that winners are getting cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site, where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend, where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now. Enter code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter BLUE for free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. And let's try to finish up the program going to Twitter. A number of you had been chiming in on the conversation using hashtag Giants Chat. We take your tweets, we take your phone calls as well in terms of what you saw out of the Jacksonville Jaguars game. And Roman and I perusing through these tweets, certainly a lot of topics that were brought up during the course of the program. You were referring to the offensive line makeup earlier in the program, and that is something that they're going to talk about, I'm sure, during the course of the offseason. But there is some youth on this team, and a number of people have been weighing in terms of Richburg, for example. You know, he can play multiple positions, Roman, and we saw that so far throughout the course of this season. I mean, he played center in college. He can use it. You can use him at guard. The fact that he's young, they're at least moving him around so that later on in his career he can be comfortable in multiple spots.
And let's be honest, the offensive linemen, you know, you go back, you know, Charles Brown, Schwartz, J.D. Walton. I mean, the guys they brought in here were all 27 years old in the offseason. I mean, literally, they're all 27 years old. I mean, some of them have turned 28 by now. So speaking to Jeff Schwartz last week on the pregame show, I asked him, I said, what's your most natural position? He goes, anything on the right side. At the beginning of the season, it was Schwartz at left guard, Brandon Mosley at right guard. You thought he was going to be the guy this year to really replace Chris Snead. I think you have a good right side with if whatever happens with Schwartz with his injury. But I think Schwartz is a good natural right guard with Pugh at right tackle. You know, you put whether it's Richburg or JD at center, you know, down the line. And then you find a left guard that's good athletic, that can block, that can pull, trap. That can block downfield on a second level in terms of screens and things like that. I mean, that's a formula that you have. And I talk to Sean O'Hare about this all the time. I mean, Eli Manning had a seasoned group of offensive linemen in front of him when he was younger. And now in his older age, you're going through some reshuffling. But you've drafted guys, you've signed guys in free agency in terms of Pugh and Rich and J.D. Walton in terms of Jeff Schwartz as well. So you're not going to revamp the entire offensive line next year again. I mean, that's just impossible. I mean, you can't do that. So I know someone disagreed with me about you only really need one spot. But if everyone's healthy at their position, the only question mark is really, like, what happens at left guard next year. Some people have said Pugh can go to left guard. And maybe you put Schwartz at right tackle, then you still need another right guard. But again, you have to continue to find multiple combinations. And I remember in the old days, you know, 01, 02, you started taking, Jason Whittle. You took Deal. You moved him. He started a different spot every
Deal
week.
Deal was like a swing type attack. Yeah, when
so
he came back.
You had to find different positions, different combinations until you found that right combination. And there's nothing wrong with that.
And that's what they'll have to determine, at least for the next game in the small picture, because Schwartz is dealing with the ankle injury and James Brewer coming off a concussion. Tom Coughlin will have a conference call later today for the latest. Stay locked here to Giants.com, where they will keep you up to date on the injury news as well as the developments for the Giants as they get set for the Tennessee Titans. Big Blue Kickoff Live with each and every weekday. I'll be back with Jeff Fiegels tomorrow. Roman, it was good working with you. Look forward to it in the future.
Pleasure's all mine, brother.
For Roman Oben, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one. Right here on Giants.com.
Oh, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Want to get some punch.
Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.